Preds Insiders 102.5 The Game. Adam Vingan and Willie Donick here with you on a Wednesday evening. We hope you are having a wonderful day. After a wonderful edition of DVD, we keep it rolling with an hour of Predators talk. Mike Kelly of Sport Logic will join us at 6:30 to break down the analytics behind the Nashville Predators, what to expect. We'll talk Luke Evangelista. We'll talk UC Saros. We'll talk offense and defense. All of that with Mike Kelly, one of my favorite people in the business. And I'm not just saying that because I work for him. We will talk to Mike Kelly at 6:30. But Willie, let's start with last night's preseason game. The Predators fall 3-2 in a shootout to the quote-unquote Tampa Bay Lightning, because, you know, how many actual members of the Tampa Bay Lightning that you know played last night? Not very many. Although former Nashville Predators defenseman Steven Santini played nearly 20 minutes. So, hey, you go, Steven Santini. But, Willie, you were on the call for part of the game last night, and you had the distinct pleasure of announcing Brady Martin's first two unofficial NHL goals. Brady Martin scored twice in the second period. The Lightning scored twice in the third period, then one in a shootout. But let's start with Brady Martin again. Only two goals of the game. We talked about Brady Martin last week. The Predators have a big decision to make when it comes to Brady Martin. Do they keep him around for a little while, let him get a taste of the NHL? Do they send him back to junior? And if they do that, he has to stay there until the season is over. But your analysis of Brady Martin's performance last night.
Well, let's start with what Andrew Brunette said after the game, because he was asked pretty much flat out, hey, does he have it? It was like they were like, does he really have a chance? Because remember, the in-between option is you can keep him around and play him sparingly up until 9 games. But right now, I think what Andrew Brunette's answer was is he didn't answer the question, but he said they're going to make it hard. He and a couple other young players are really excelling. But if you take a look at what's developing here, they just lost Nicholas Hague, so he's going to almost certainly start the year on IR, so that opens up a roster spot. Zach LaRue right now is still hurt. I don't know when he's coming back, but you see where I'm going is they might have even a little more roster flexibility than they thought they would going into camp. But knock on wood, they can't afford any more big injuries here. But because they are so thin at center, it's there for the taking. And that was Chris Mason's point while we were calling it. And he looks really good. And you're like you said, the Lightning didn't have the full complement of players there. It's a game the Predators really should have won. They outplayed them. They didn't put them away in the third period when they needed to. But Martin was the guy that stood out along with Matthew Wood, I think, more than anybody else. So Martin is so young. Like, to put it in perspective, if you're out there and you're listening, you have a son or daughter who's a senior in high school, that's Brady Martin is just a high school graduate. He's like a freshman in college now. So he's not far removed from his high school prom. I don't know if they had a prom where he's from, where he's a farmer and all that stuff. Maybe they have some version of that. But he is so young. That being said, he looks like he belongs, right? He's pushing.
You mentioned Nick Hague. The Predators announced today that Nick Hague will miss 4 to 6 weeks with an upper body injury he suffered on Sunday in preseason action. That is a big loss, both literally and figuratively, because Nick Hague is 6'6" and 245 pounds. And Nick Hague started training camp on the top pair with Roman Josi. So Hague will miss at least the first month of the regular season. The question that Andrew Brunette is going to have to answer is, with Hague out of action for a month, which defenseman will get the first crack at playing with Roman Josi on the top pair? Willie, which defenseman comes to mind for you when I ask that question?
Well, before we get to that, let's quickly talk about not having Hague, because I think, you know, going back to the summer moves, that was a central move. Barry Trotz went against the grain, I think in your mind and a lot of people's mind, and really sought a defenseman with the skill set that Hague has. A lot younger, B, maybe most importantly, a lot bigger. And I think they were really trying to find if Nick Hague was the right partner for Roman Josi. Now, remember last year we all thought, hey, Brady Shea, Roman Josi, put him down, that's going to work. And they had to scrap that. But now they'll have to put that theory aside, whether Hague's the right guy. It does look pretty clear that they would like to play Roman Josi on the right side, his offside, which gives you the opportunity to put a left-handed defenseman with him. And so all that being said, I think what they did last night was an indicator of what they might try, and that is Adam Willsby, who has been a guy that has been singled out publicly by a lot of the people. You listen to what Andrew Burnett says, you listen to what some of the other people who are evaluating, and obviously Barry Trotz, they have all singled out Adam Willsby as a guy who's having a very good training camp. So that would allow you to keep Nick Perbix with Brady Shea. But Perbix being a right shot is another guy that you could pair with Roman Josi. So they might try a couple of different things.
A couple of other things I noticed line combination-wise in the preseason game last night. It appears that the combination of Michael Bunting, Eric Halla, and Jonathan Marchessault is going to be a line to start the season. My first thought is that line has a lot of bite because all three of those players aren't shy about mixing it up. They're feisty.
A little too much feistiness, and they went over the line last night.
Therein lies the danger of that particular line. But it's an intriguing mix to me. Jonathan Marchessault had a down season. Again, every Predators player last season had a down season, really. But when I think of biggest disappointments from last season, I put Marchessault at or near the top of my list. Of course, there were the comments he made at the end of the season that got a lot of buzz on this station and in other places about Andrew Brunette and adjustments and such. But what do you like about that line? We discussed what the potential danger is, which is they could cross the line. They could get in penalty trouble. But what do you think of the positive outlook?
Well, I think the positive is with Halla and Bunting, those guys play with an edge. And I hope that brings out the best in Jonathan Marchessault's game. And that's the underdog guy that he is in his DNA. He's an undrafted player, right? He had to earn everything he's had in this league. He didn't have the year he was looking for. I'm sure all summer he probably heard how, hey, Marchessault didn't have a great first year in Nashville. So I think the edge on that line could be good. John Hines, who was the coach for Nashville when Halla was here the first time, used to call Halla a junkyard dog, right? And you can see it. Halla, he's got strengths and weaknesses in his game. He's well-traveled, but he plays hard. Those three played very hard last night. I don't think they always played smart. And Halla and Marchessault each took a penalty late in the game, put Nashville on a 3-on-5, which they killed. But I think it sapped them. It sort of opened the door up for Tampa Bay to eventually tie the game on a bit of a fluky play. But that being said, I do think they're going to ride that trio and see where it takes them. Because the idea is to get the most out of Marchessault. If you notice, Marchessault, Forsberg, and Stamkos, for the most part, have been split up in all of the games so far. They're dividing them up in sort of a top nine where there's some young blood in there as well. I think that's what they're experimenting with, and we'll see if it sticks.
The other thing I've noticed, both in practice and in the preseason games, is that it looks like Andrew Brunette wants a duo of Steven Stamkos and Fedor Svechkov. Now, the winger is to be determined. I assume that if Luka Evangelista were in training camp, he might be playing on that line with Stamkos and Svechkov. In the game last night, it was Reed Schaefer who was playing on that line with Stamkos and Svechkov. But I'm intrigued by that duo. Svechkov, to me, is the quintessential X-factor breakout player. If the Predators have any hope of bouncing back, of course they're going to need Roman Josi to bounce back and Philip Forsberg and UC Saros and Steven Stamkos, etc. But you need a secondary player to emerge to put things back in the right direction. The Predators desperately need as well an infusion of youth, specifically a young player who can make a difference. What are your expectations for Fedor Svechkov this season?
I think he is a big swing player in the idea of can they bounce back. The reason Stamkos, I think, is a good fit on paper, or at least why they hope it will work, is that, and we saw this in the game last night a lot, Stamkos can supplement Svechkov in the faceoff circle. So Stamkos isn't the center, but he can do some center things, which is, I think, one of the things they thought of when they picked up Erik Haula. But Haula needs to be a full-time center on this roster right now, unless they can pick up another guy at some point during the course of the season. So in the meantime, Stamkos, on paper, looks like he could be a fit for Svechkov. But for Svechkov to be effective, they've got to get goals from Stamkos, right? Stamkos is a great shooter. Can Svechkov be the playmaker that they need? And then, of course, the big question is, who is the third guy? And there's some intrigue. The three intriguing young guys who are making the most of the opportunity, I think, in the absence of Evangelista, are Schaefer, who's got a unique skill set with the size he has, and he's looking very, very good. People are raving about him. I would put him right up next to Adam Willsby as the guy I hear the buzz most about how he has made a jump. He told Max Hirsch that the key for him was he finally got his shoulder fixed. He was trying to play through a shoulder that was giving him trouble, he said, for 3 years, and he had major surgery on it at the beginning of last year after he got off to a great start, but he said it popped out on him twice. So he had labrum repair or something. He gave all the facts and figures to Max. But he looks very effective right now. Then the obvious is Matthew Wood and how well he's playing. So those are pieces that are revolving around while they still try to figure out what to do with Evangelista. But I'm with you. Stamkos and Svechkov, they are pairing together, and Svechkov looks bigger. He looks older, more mature. So now we'll see if they've got the consistency in his game figured out, because that's the key. He can look good on given nights, but consistency is the issue with him.
Coming up next on Preds Insiders, how much of a bounce back should we realistically expect from the Predators this season? The Athletic has been rolling out its team previews, and the Athletic's preview on the Predators is unkind, let's say. 615-737-1025. If you have a question for Willie or me, you can call us, you can text us. We are live. 615-737-1025. This is Preds Insiders, 1025 The Game. Preds Insiders, 1025 The Game. Adam Bingen and Willie Donick here with you on Wednesday evening. The Athletic has started rolling out its team previews. And the way The Athletic does it is they do it in reverse order. So they start with the teams they expect to be the worst and build up to the teams that they expect to be the best. And the Predators, unfortunately, were included in the first crop of team previews, which means The Athletic doesn't expect much from the Predators this season. They have them 28th.
So pessimistic.
In the NHL, of course, there are 32 teams in the NHL. The teams beneath the Predators: Seattle, Pittsburgh, San Jose, and Chicago. And it's a great preview, really well done, but this is the crux of their argument. Quote, "The Predators' luck in 2023-24 was expected to run out, but not to the extreme degree of last year. An aging team with poor fits all over the roster can only bounce back so far. Some finishing regression is expected, but that likely coincides with a puck possession drop-off thanks to age and some of Nashville's curious moves over the last year. The end result, a near 500 team that has a better shot of landing in the bottom five again than returning to the playoffs." And there's one... Well, there are many things that The Athletic mentions in this preview, but one thing that the authors of the story pointed out was a stat that's known as PDO. And PDO is, simply put, puck luck. And the way you figure out what a team's PDO is simply by adding its shooting percentage and its save percentage. And the baseline is 100. So if you have a PDO of 100, that means you are performing...
Your luck is balanced.
Yes. If your PDO is under 100, you're unlucky. If your PDO is above 100, you're lucky. So the Predators at 5-on-5 last season had a PDO of 97. They shot 7.1% at 5-on-5, and they had a save percentage of 89.9 at 5-on-5. Together, that's 97.0. Willie, let me tell you how unlucky the Predators were last season. In the salary cap era, so since 2005-2006, 20 years, if you look at each single season every team has played over that span, the Predators' PDO last season ranks 490th out of 492. The only unluckier teams at 5-on-5, according to NHL.com, over the past 20 years, the 2019-20 Red Wings and the 2012-13 Panthers. So the Predators were incredibly unlucky last season. But here's my question for you, Willie. We were talking about this the other day off the air. You should expect a bounce back of sorts, right? The Predators have really good shooters. You don't expect UC Saros to struggle as much save percentage-wise as he did last season if the Predators improve defensively. But with the age of the roster, with how the process seemed a little bit off last season, yeah, they'll bounce back. But can we expect them to bounce back so much that they put themselves back in the playoff conversation? That's the question I have.
And I think that is a very good question. And it's interesting when you throw the puck luck thing out there, there are some people that fire back at you right away and say, you make your own luck. And I do think that is something that they acknowledge, is that they were unlucky. Everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. They didn't catch many breaks, particularly with the shooting percentage. That it was ridiculously low. But at the same time, are there things they could do to improve the quality of the shots? Yes. But even if you look at analytics sites, and we can ask Mike Kelly about this, you know, they did get a reasonable amount of quality, and they should have had more goals than they did. But that was last year. This is this year. And so what's the ceiling? I think what they did in the Athletic that was pretty good is they did account for, hey, if they do bounce back, they could get into the 90-92 point range, which could get you in a conversation for the last wild card. But that's not a great ceiling. But what Barry Trotz has been saying all along, he's saying, look, I expected this, right? I knew when I signed Steven Stamkos and Marchessault and guys like that, I was hoping to get as long of a runway as I can with Josi Forsberg, O'Reilly, the guys that already had who were in their 30s, and continue to, as he calls it, buy time for what the Athletic has as the 10th highest prospect pool. So right now you can see they're in between. They've got a 30-something-year-old team that doesn't look super sexy and scary on paper, and they've got these young guys like Wood and Brady Martin and guys like that who aren't really ready to help you every night. So you're hoping for the best of both, that the kids are a little bit ahead of the curve and there's still something in the tank of the 30-somethings. But that's a lot that has to go right for them to have the season that they would love to have. And there's probably a higher probability, and that's what the Athletic concludes, that it goes the other way, that they'll end up down low and be picking high again. But well, that's why you play the games.
The Athletic says the Predators' best case is 92 points. Josi, Forsberg, and Saros bounce back toward the franchise level. Stamkos and Shea play up to their paychecks, and the Predators get another shot at the playoffs. The worst case scenario, 67 points. Last year wasn't a fleeting nightmare. It was a new normal for a poor-fitting, over-the-hill team that looks utterly hopeless going forward. The bottom line, it's tough to imagine a repeat of last season for the Predators, which I would agree. It's equally tough to imagine that a roster populated mainly by aging stars and spare parts wins anything of consequence. They represent the start of the league's truly mushy middle, and that's never real estate worth occupying.
I feel like they underreported their own information with the prospect pool. In reading that, I didn't really hear much discussion of the prospects, which I guess has them believing that none of them are going to make big impacts this year. A lot of them 21, 22 years old, in the case of Brady Martin, even younger. But that's what we'll see. And we'll. I think also the X factor is, can they get a team-elevating performance from UC Saros, which levels the playing field a lot, which he's done in the past, not too long ago. But he's coming off a really rough year for him last year. But can they defend better in front of him? All of these things. I would point out that 2 years ago, that model, that same model, had the Predators going nowhere, and they had 99 points. So there's always surprises. And I like how the Athletic kind of laughs at themselves. And Dom Lucision's always like, it's just the model. It's the model. It's not me. It's the model. Because this is what their numbers tell them. And there's a lot of good information in those numbers, but the numbers aren't always right.
Coming up next on Preds Insiders, Mike Kelly, Director of Analytics and Insights at SportLogic, will join us. We will talk to him about this and more. SportLogic, a data analysis company that services nearly all 32 NHL teams. And I also work for SportLogic alongside my duties here at 102.5. So looking forward to talking to Mike and getting his perspective. Mike Kelly will also be a part of the FanDuel Sports Network broadcasts around the NHL,
yes,
which of course includes Nashville. And I know that you're excited about having Mike on the broadcast.
Yes, he's gonna check in with us from time to time. And that will be great insight to utilize, because we've been using the SportLogic numbers if you've been watching our broadcasts. But I always say I understand a certain level of it. He's got deeper levels to help interpret all of these great things that they do. So looking forward to that. And what we're going to focus on, we've talked about, but a lot of people are wondering, what's the gap? Why is there such a disconnect in the Luke Evangelista negotiations? We're going to try to see if Mike Kelly can give us an analytic perspective on what a guy like that is valued at, just beyond how many goals he had, how many assists. I see some people on Twitter saying, well, this guy had this many goals and this many assists, and he got X money. Luke Evangelista's got the same amount of goals and the same amount of assists. Why isn't he worth that much money? But I think the analytics can give you maybe a little different lens on that.
615-737-1025. We will also take your reaction on the Predators as well. Mike Kelly will join us next. Adam Vingan, Willie Donick. This is Preds Insiders, 102.5 The Game. Preds Insiders, 102.5 The Game. Adam Vingan and Willie Donick here with you. Please be joined on our phone line by one of my favorite people in hockey. And I'm not just saying that because I work for him. It's Mike Kelly, Director of Analytics and Insights at SportLogic. Hello, Mike. How are you?
Promoted. How are you doing?
Thank you very much, Mike. We're doing very well.
Doing well.
Glad to have you.
Glad to hear. Glad to talk to you, and thanks for having me on.
Of course. The pleasure is ours. So let's start with Luke Evangelista, because there's been a lot of reporting about Evangelista, who is not at Predators training camp. He reportedly has left Nashville, gone back to Canada to train as he awaits a resolution to his contract stalemate. And I think a lot of people around here especially don't quite understand what the holdup is, because Luke Evangelista, he's been a solid player for the Predators, but when you just look at the traditional numbers, he hasn't necessarily wowed you. So when you dig under the surface and look at what makes Luke Evangelista valuable, what stands out to you?
Well, look, last season was a tough year for everybody in Nashville, right? And him included. There wasn't really anything that jumped off the page that's like, oh, he's one of the best in the league at this. But yeah, he's a good player. His playmaking is what stands out. That more than anything else, I would say, if you go back and do kind of more of a couple year sample, is what you notice. And you know, what's the holdup? I don't know. Like, he's a gifted playmaker. He's not a big guy, obviously. He's shown that he can handle the puck in the offensive zone and keep it on his stick. I think it's a bit of a battle for him to get into the middle of the ice, into the guts of the ice, where you can kind of bump your point totals up. That being said, he's been kind of a half a point a game guy, more or less, the last couple of years, moving around in the lineup. And I like him. I was talking to someone in Nashville a couple of years ago, just saying, you know, hey, this guy looks like he could be kind of a breakout type Canada player. And, I was told, you know, hey, we think it's there, but, you know, might take a little bit. So I don't know. To me, outside looking in, I think like a bridge deal, 2 years at maybe, I don't know, $2.5 million kind of makes sense for me, but sounds like they're pretty far apart from what I've read.
And I would agree with you in terms of the projected contract. Willie and I have talked about this quite a bit. We've also landed on that 2 year, two and a half per year type contract. The Predators did receive some bad news today. Nick Hague, whom they acquired in the offseason, suffered an injury in preseason action. He'll miss the next 4 to 6 weeks, so at least the first month of the regular season. But he will be back. And I'll be honest with you, Mike. When the Predators traded for Hague and then gave him the contract they gave him, 4 years with a $5.5 million cap hit, I was blown away, and not in a good way. I was shocked by that number. But the Predators are trying to get better defensively. So how much of an impact can you see Hague and Nick Perbix, how much of an impact can you see the both of them making on the Predators on the defensive end so that they can improve in that area of the ice?
Yeah, I would like Hague defensively a little better. I don't think either one of these guys is going to come in and kind of be a savior in that sense. I don't know that Nashville's expecting them to either. They probably want to by committee just get better in that department, and they have to. Like last season, I mean, man, they didn't give up a ton of shots. They gave up a lot of quality shots. They got beat off the rush quite often. And some of that's just, you know, kind of how they play offensively too. But the thing with Hague and the contracts like that, right, is like he's played up and down in Vegas's lineup. He played over 300 minutes at even strength with Petrangelo last year and did all right. Obviously, he's, the farther down he goes, the more impactful he can be. But they brought him in here and they paid him that kind of money to be, top four guy. Perbix, you know, he's used to playing big minutes too. He played a lot with Victor Hedman in Tampa Bay, played with Dunna as well. I think Perbix can help you on the PK, which is a good thing for Nashville. But I'm not really sold. And again, I'm not saying that the Predators view it this way, but if you're a fan, like I'm not sold on either guy being these, you know, elite defensive players that are going to all of a sudden turn the Preds into, a top tier defensive team.
We're talking to Mike Kelly for Sport Logic. He will be contributing on the FanDuel broadcast. And Mike, we mentioned that in the last segment. We're looking forward to working with you on our broadcast to match you up with what the hockey analysts, in this case Chris Mason and Hal Gill, who I like to bring your numbers to the table a lot of times for them. And Hal Gill always uses a stat called get it done-ativity, and he throws all the numbers out the window and he says, I go by what I see out there. So I'm looking forward to the debate.
That's great. You know, I've worked with a lot of people that kind of have that sense of the game, and I enjoy it. And it's great. And I think, you know, Chris and I have talked over the years quite a bit. He's pretty well versed, as you know. First of all, I'm really looking forward to working with you and your crew as well. October 9th against Columbus, I'll be there,
right,
joining you guys. So the funny thing is, though, is like as Hal and I will get to know each other a little better, and I have a lot of respect for what he does. He's really good at it. I think there can be like a misconception sometimes of like, well, you view the game this way and the player views the game this way, when really it's just like players have such a unique way of seeing the game that no one else can, because they've been on the ice and they've been in those moments. What someone like I would try to do is enhance, you know, what's going on in the ice for the viewer and add context to these things and point some things out. So I've always gone along really well with people that, you know, whether they like the numbers or don't use them much, I've always had a great kind of working relationship. I look forward to doing it with you guys too. You have a really fun broadcast.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. So Mike, one thing that I know Andrew Burnett lost a lot of sleep over last year that was very evident from the Sport Logic numbers was the Predators were in the top 10 of offensive zone time, and yet their shooting percentage was so low, we know that they ended up struggling to score. I think they were dead last in 5-on-5 goals. So how did that happen? When you look at those numbers, why did they struggle to score so much when a lot of the same guys the year before, they had the same type of zone time, and they cashed in a lot more?
Well, I'll say this. There is some regression that's bound to take place. Like, they were never going to be an elite scoring team, but it was puzzling to me watching them, being like, this team literally can't buy goals. Like, it was crazy in that sense. So some of that will come back. They finished the year 20th in goal probability and 31st in actual goals. So some of that's going to normalize. But again, like, yeah, you're right. They had a lot of zone time. They took a fair amount of shots. They really didn't get to the quality areas of the ice as often as they should, given the zone time that they get. They're not a team that's going to beat you, you know, with their speed and off the rush. And I think, and this is even going back a couple of years, I think the Preds at their best are when they're forechecking and they're forcing opponents into mistakes in their opponent's D zone. And they're getting multiple chances, like a shot, a rebound. Working, right? Work boot mentality. I've seen them be successful that way. So to answer your question, why didn't they score? Some of it's going to be a natural regression where if they did it all again the exact same way, they'd have a few more goals. But the other thing, you can't have empty calories zone time. If you're going to have the time, you got to try to find a way to get more quality shots as opposed to volume.
And I'm curious, and your perspective would be valuable on this. The adjustments. I think they would like to defend better. You've mentioned Andrew Brunet has been sort of an innovative, play going forward type of coach, offensive minded. But I think there's maybe a difference in philosophy now on how they want to play with this particular group. Aging, as you mentioned, maybe not as fast. How much can you change your DNA some with a lot of the same players by just changing how you play?
You can to a point, and it can take time too. There's teams, you know, that a newer coach can come in and spend a year just trying to teach, you know, really in their view, kind of basic fundamentals of how they want to play and the systems they want to play. And it can take a year. I'll go back to Paul Maurice, who took over in Florida, and that was a quick strike, fast paced, score off the rush type team that he took over from. And they completely did a 180 with how they play. They turned into a dump and chase team. And the team that we saw now win multiple Stanley Cups playing the way they play, they barely made the playoffs that first year, learning how to play that way and how to do it effectively. So it can take time. I'm always on the side of adjust the way that you play to the players that you have at your disposal versus come in and say, this is what I think wins and let's all figure it out. I do think you have to understand who you have and what you can do with it. So that would be my philosophy anyways. And I think it's one that a lot of people share. And the Preds, like, they have skill, right? I mean, Evangelista can play with skill. We know that if he gets his deal done. Philip Forsberg's caught some of the grossest hands in the league. Ryan O'Reilly's still a really good overall player at his age. They're kind of thin down the middle, which you never want to be, right? That can make it tough.
Mike Kelly, Director of Analytics and Insights at SportLogic, has been our guest on Preds Insiders. Mike, thank you so much for this. We'll do it again soon.
Awesome, guys, and looking forward to the start of the season. We're a couple weeks away.
Yes, absolutely. Mike Kelly has been our guest on the program. Always love talking to Mike. Again, I work for Mike, so I'm biased, but his insight is invaluable, and you can hear his insight as part of the FanDuel Sports Network broadcasts. He's doing it for the entire FanDuel Sports Network. So all of the other teams that have FanDuel broadcasts, Mike will be a part of those broadcasts, but he will be a part of the broadcast with Willie and the crew this season.
Special guest star, as they used to say in the the sitcoms back in the pre-cable when the big shows, special guest star.
Right, but you can find Mike Kelly. He's on NHL Network a ton.
Yes.
You can find him on Sportsnet, and we hope to have him on again soon. Excellent insight. We will react to what Mike had to say. We'll take your reaction as well.
I'm curious what our listeners think of the 2 years times 2.5. I don't know what the deal on the table is from Barry Trotz for Luke Evangelista. They both sides have said, basically, it's 2 years. But we've heard the reports of the 3.4 being the comparable, 2.5 would be in the ballpark. I don't know what the Predators have offered, but they're far enough apart that we know Luke Evangelista went back home. So what did you think of Mike Kelly's? It wasn't that far from what you and I think.
Yeah,
we've thought all along.
You and I have sort of always landed on the 2-year, $5 million deal overall, $2.5 million per season. But we'll take your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025. We'll wrap up Preds Insiders. Coming up next, Adam Vingan, Willie Donick, 1025 The Game. Preds Insiders, 1025 The Game. Willie Donick and Adam Vingan here with you. A reminder that the Predators hit the ice again tomorrow at F&M Bank Arena in Clarksville for the third annual Gold Star Showcase. That game starts at 6:30 p.m.
We'll see if Tanner Molendijk and another defenseman, first-round pick, Cameron Reed, they both, I think, returned to practice today. So that's a good sign. I know a lot of people would love to get a closer look at them, and this is a good game to do it because it's going to be a lot of the younger players that are still around. I don't think you'll see too many of the veterans in the lineup. They don't play another home preseason game until the very end, which will be more or less the opening night roster. So the other games are on the road this weekend where you tend to, again, not send the frontline guys. So they're going to be doing a lot of work behind the scenes at practice with the veterans. But I think the younger guys are going to take center stage in the next few games that we see.
So that game tomorrow in Clarksville is at 6:30 p.m. It will be streamed on NashvillePredators.com and broadcast right here.
Right here.
On 102.5 The Game. Willie, I'm curious, you know, when the season starts, you know, I'm focused on the Predators. I sort of have tunnel vision about the Predators and getting a feel for the team in the first few days of training camp, that sometimes I forget to look around the NHL. When you look around the NHL, as all of the other teams are also preparing for the start of the season, is there a team or teams outside of Nashville that intrigues you, whether for good intrigue or bad intrigue? Because I'm starting to get more of a feel what's happening around the league. Are there any other teams that you're keying in on as the training camps start around the NHL?
I don't know that there's a team. I think every year when I start reading the previews and I start listening to what's going on around the different camps, it reminds me that every year, and this, if you're looking for a reason for hope for a bounce back season, there's always year in and year out a couple of teams that you think are going to be really, really good that the wheels fall off, and that was the Predators last year. And it goes to Barry Trotz's quote, we're going to try to prove the experts wrong for a third straight year.
Yes.
Go back in the positive way. But there's a lot of parity in a salary cap league. There's a lot of things that can go right. The randomness, these numbers that we're talking about with puck luck and things, you see teams just have everything go right. Guys stay healthy and shoot the puck well. They get bounces. They get confidence. And their goaltender has a really good year, and they're way, way better than you think. And then there's other teams. I guess if you pin me down for a team, to me, the key team in the Central Division is Utah.
Mm-hmm.
They've been building for a while. They've still got a lot of prospects in the system who are not ready to help them, but in a couple years, look out if they can. But they, by the end of last year, I think they started looking like they could be dangerous. They've got some good pieces that have sort of arrived that are still young. But in the new market, they've got fans now. What is that team this year? What comes to mind for you? What are you expecting from Utah? Do you think they could bust in and take a playoff spot from somebody?
I do. I am bullish on the Utah Mammoth. Keep in mind,
yeah, they are now the Mammoth.
They are not the hockey club anymore.
And the reason I single them out is in the division, they're in the West, they're in the Predators division, and you would feel like any pathway to the Predators making the playoffs would probably not include Utah making the playoffs. Now, this could be freezing cold takes down the road, but you would think, right, in order to make the playoffs, you got to be better than Utah. You probably have to be better than St. Louis. And
yes,
those are two teams that, if everything goes right, they could be really good teams. And if it doesn't go right, they they could be the Utah that we've seen that was Arizona, you know, a team that ends up with 70-something points. They look good for a while, but they don't quite have enough. St. Louis, a couple years ago, looked like they were lost. Last year, it kicked in, and they were the Predators of 2 years ago, right? They couldn't lose for a while.
Predators fans who are familiar with the Arizona Coyotes, of course, who are no longer the Arizona Coyotes, they're now the Utah Mammoth. You've seen these players for years. Clayton Keller and Dylan Gunther and Logan Cooley. And they acquired J.J. Paterka from the Buffalo Sabres in the offseason. That was a big get. You know, Mikhail Sergachev had a big season as a number one defenseman for the then Utah Hockey Club. You know, Vejmelka is a solid goalie. So I like a lot of what Utah has done. It always felt like when the franchise was in Arizona, it was being held back by, you know,
lack of resources.
Correct. That is no longer the case in Utah. Ryan Smith, the owner of the Mammoth, I believe is also the owner of the Jazz. So he does not lack for resources. So I am really intrigued by them. They are a team that, especially if you're looking at the Central Division, that is a team that I am focused on. You know, another interesting development, speaking of the Central Division, I'm curious the impact Jonathan Toews will have in Winnipeg. He returned to the he made his Jets debut, quote unquote, in the Jets preseason game against the Oilers on Tuesday. Played 18 and a half minutes. I mean, Jonathan Toews hasn't played for what, 2-3 years? Had some major health concerns. You know, comes back to the league, playing for his hometown team. The Jets were really good last season. So I'm wondering, like, how much of the Jonathan Toews that Predators fans came to loathe, right, as a member of the Chicago Blackhawks, how much of that Jonathan Toews can the Jets get?
That's one to watch. He's a Winnipeg native. I've heard a lot of different things, but it's a total X factor. When you haven't played in that long, and you were once one of the greatest players of your era, then what does that look like?
He hasn't played since the 2022-2023 season.
I mean, that's a lot of time off, but he's been working behind the scenes. He obviously, his guile, his hockey sense was always one of the things that just made him great. He doesn't have to do everything for this team, but I think the Jets are another team that, if you look year in and year out, There's variance, right? 4 or 5 years, there's some years where they're kind of meh. Other years where it goes right, and like, wow, look at the Jets. They're 110 points. You know, the last couple years, they've looked great. And then in the playoffs, it's not quite there for them. They lost Nikolaj Ehlers. A lot of people think they might regress. We know their attendance issues right now might be more of a factor because the cap has gone up. It may not be as easy for them as other teams to pay and get to the ceiling. And they're going to ride. It's just like, if you tell me that Roman Josi, Philip Forsberg, and UC Saros all have really good years, then I'll tell you that the Predators are going to be a pretty good team. And like in Winnipeg, you tell me Kyle Connor, Mark Scheifele, and Connor Hellebuck have really good seasons, they're probably going to be really good. Now, the Jets probably have a better second wave of players right now than the Predators. Less question marks than the Predators have. But not too long ago, they wanted to run Mark Scheifele out of town. And then they re-upped with him, and he has rebounded and looked really good. So sometimes it's very hard to tell who's done, who continues to be really productive in their 30s, and who really starts tapering off in their 30s. And for Nashville, the obvious guys on that list, right? What do you get from Marchessault? What do you get from Stamkos? What does Ryan O'Reilly still have in the tank? Gus Nyquist dropped off the cliff last year, and you saw what the results were for the team.
That'll do it for us on this edition.
By the way, Nyquist is in Winnipeg.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
They've replaced Ehlers, basically, with Nyquist. So they're hoping to squeeze one more year out of Gus.
Good luck to the Jets after what we saw with
Nyquist
with
know.
The Predators.
You never know.
You never know. But that'll do it for us. Here's one thing I do know. The show's over for today. We will be back next Wednesday.
Over. Ferris Bueller. Go home. It's over.
Well, hopefully you're home by now, it being close to 7 o'clock. But we will be back next week with another full hour of Predators discussion. For Willie Donick, I'm Adam Vingan. This is Preds Insiders, 102.5 The Game.